The House Committee on Judiciary to order. Today is January 27th. First item on the agenda is a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2321. I have Mark DeCote from Department of Corrections, please. I probably mispronounced that.
Have some respect for you.
Thank you.
Please go ahead and identify yourself for the record.
Members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Mark J. Cadott, and my current position is that of Community Corrections Director for the State of Oregon Department of Corrections.
Yeah, please.
I'm here this afternoon to urge your support for House Bill 2321 and kind of give a brief explanation of that bill. What House Bill 2321 does is remove the requirement that certain offenders complete community service under the supervision of the Department of Corrections. Currently, ORS 137.131 states that a person who's convicted of criminal mischief that resulted in defacing property by creating graffiti must agree to provide community service as a condition of any probationary sentence. The service must include removing graffiti that person created or graffiti that another person created or both. If the defendant does not agree to provide the community service must be served under the direction of the Oregon Department of Corrections. This legislative proposal would change the current law by deleting Section 3 of ORS 137.131, which states if the defendant does not consent to donate labor as required by ORS 137.128, the period of community service must be served under the supervision and control of the Department of Corrections. In researching the minutes from the 1995 Senate Judiciary Committee work session on Senate Bill 343, it appears as though the intent of that committee was to delete the reference to the Department of Corrections from this section. The primary issue addressed by House Bill 2321 is that the Oregon Department of Corrections is not in a position to supervise offenders, many of whom are sentenced for misdemeanors, who refuse to donate their labor as required by statute. There are other remedies available under ORS 137.128, which allow for the revocation of probation or contempt of court for failure to perform the community service. So once again, the Department of Corrections does support the passage of this bill. And Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time and consideration.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Smith.
Who would do it instead?
Chair Barker, Representative Smith. Under the current setup, the local community corrections office are responsible for supervising people under probation and would enforce the conditions that they do the community service on a local level.
And that is already what happens, or we want that to happen more, or both?
Chair Barker, Representative Smith, that is what currently happens.
And so this merely cleans that up and lets everybody know that that's sort of what happens anyway?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you very much.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2321. Open a work session on House Bill 2321. Are there any additional questions from anybody? I'll accept the motion to move House Bill 2321.
So moved.
Representative Stigler moves House Bill 2321 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krueger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnant?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion passes, and Representative Stigler, if you'd carry that bill, please.
Sure.
Thank you. Happy to.
get started yet.
Next item on the agenda, we'll open a public hearing only on House Bill 2312, and Christopher Burford. Please identify yourself and then go ahead for the record and anyway.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Burford. My address is P.O. Box 638, Pendleton, Oregon, 97801. I'm here today to speak on in favor of House Bill 2312, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Indian Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. House Bill 2312 is a modest piece of legislation. And I, in my written testimony, which you're receiving now, I go into a fair bit of detail about its justification, its context, citations. I'm going to skip all that right now and talk and really just take you right to the heart of the changes it makes and why. If you take your copy of the bill and turn to page 2, lines 16 through 26, you see the definitions for various types of corporate entities that are called foreign. So you have foreign corporation, that's subsection 15, foreign limited liability company, foreign nonprofit corporation, foreign professional corporation. Now, what's it mean to be foreign for the purposes of this statute? And for this, I want you to look at the existing language in italics. A foreign corporation is a corporation for profit incorporated under a law other than the law of the state. So, created by the state of Washington, a corporation stated created by the federal government, or France, or a federally recognized tribe in the state of Oregon, they're all foreign corporations. So one would think that the definition of a nonprofit foreign corporation would be the same, except it's nonprofit, but it's not. It says that, that's subsection 17, a foreign nonprofit corporation is a corporation not for profit organized under the laws of a state other than this state. So, nonprofit corporation organized under the laws of California, yes, but federal government, Canada, the Umatilla tribe or the Klamath tribe, no. Now, the problem is with the definition, not the law. Those things are, in fact, foreign nonprofit corporations. But this statute, the current Oregon law of corporations and partnerships, that is chapters 56 through 70 and chapter 648 of the ORS, they have definition sections in almost every chapter, and they repeat definitions, and the definitions are inconsistent. And so you get five different versions of what it means to be foreign throughout these. So the bill suggests, the bill would replace all those various and sometimes incorrect definitions for a single, appropriate and accurate definition. And you see, it's based on the one for foreign corporation, except it's plural instead of singular. So it's the laws other than the laws of this state. It would be applied in five different chapters, and then the locations are noted in the notes. The other change made by the statute is to the definition of entity, which applies, which appears in four different chapters of this section of the ORS. Each definition is slightly different, but they all end with a list of governments that are considered entities. And those governments are, as you can see in subsection 14 here, any state, the United States, and any foreign government. Now, there's no policy reason for not mentioning tribes in that. It's just that it's an oversight. And so this bill would, in all four of those sections where it's there, add the language, a federally recognized Native American or American Indian tribal government. Now, those were the recommendations of the Indian Law Section. They've been incorporated in the bill. The bill makes a number of other changes that I believe have been introduced by Legislative Council. They don't touch on Indian law matters, so the section's not going to comment on them. The only other thing I have to say is that I did speak with the head of the corporate division of the Secretary of State's office, and Peter Threlkell, and he told me that the division does support this bill, has no objections to it. So with that, I thank you for taking my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? Thank you very much. And nobody else is testifying. This was public hearing only today, so close the public hearing on House Bill 2312. The public hearing on House Bill 2313. I have Gregory Nelson, please. Please identify yourself for the record and then just proceed.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'm Gregory Nelson. I live in Kaiser and am an attorney. I've been since 1967. I'm regional counsel for Chicago Title Insurance in Portland and have worked for them for over 40 years. I'm chair-elect of the real estate and land use section of the Oregon State Bar. And I'm here in support of House Bill 2313. And House Bill 2313 also is one that deals with definitions and basically deals with two words relating to the definition of the word person. And there are probably 50 at least sections in the Oregon Revised Statutes that refer to the word person. And it deals with just two words that are included in many of those definitions, the word estate and the word trust. And our section, in reviewing those, determined that having those two words in the definition of person causes some confusion even among attorneys. The word estate is pretty easy to deal with. An estate is a court proceeding. It's not a person. A personal representative that is appointed by the court would be the person itself. So the word estate is not really appropriate. And the word trust also, a trust is really a document, not a person. The legislature adopted the Uniform Trust Act in 2007. And in ORS 130.155, it sets forth the creation of a trust, and it requires a settlor and a trustee. And the trust itself is the document, not the person that should be addressed. When we submitted this to Legislative Council, they went through the statutes very, very carefully and identified a number of places where the word person includes those words. So our bill has grown substantially, but our intention is to have it clear. And I can tell you how this originally came to my attention. It had to do with the word trust in relation to real property, which, of course, our section deals with. And we have had attorneys who are very insistent that they can deed property to a trust rather than to a trustee. When they do that, then if the person dies, it creates a problem because a trust is not a legal person capable of owning real property. A court can reform the deed to put title in the trustee, but it's, you know, an expensive process and a needless one if the word trust were not included in the definition of a person. So that's basically it. The way the definition reads now, it creates confusion and misunderstanding even among learned members of the bar, and can create reasons for enforcing things. It could possibly even create reasons for challenging an action where a trust is considered a party to a contract and not the trustee. It raises legal issues. So all this bill does is change the definition. Originally, we were going to change the definition so that instead of trust, it said trustee, and instead of estate, it said personal representative of an estate. But legislative council pointed out to us that those people are already considered persons and don't need to be defined as persons in the definition itself. So the words are actually deleted rather than restated. There are some sections that appear to me to go beyond what we originally intended, and in the third from the last paragraph of my testimony, there are some that I suggested be deleted from the bill, because these sections actually were deleting the word trustee, which never was our intention. So there are about five sections that that should be omitted. There's also another section, section 31, that has raised some concerns with the legal staff at the lottery, and I would like to suggest also that that be omitted from our bill until they have a chance to review things and they can revise their statute independently. So basically, the purpose is to clean up the current law so that people can't rely on the law to draw false conclusions. There isn't any cost in doing this. It's merely a cleanup bill. And with the omission of the sections that I referenced there and section 31, I would urge the committee to move this bill to the House and pass it. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to speak with you, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Okay, go ahead, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, are there any potential negative consequences to this that you can imagine, or any impact on it at all other than correction of language? Second, would it give any rights to trusts that are attendant to persons that might create some ability to, some difficulty, for instance, in restricting speech rights or something else that would create problems for legislative bodies of the future?
Okay, Chair Barker, Representative Smith, I don't believe there are any negative aspects to this bill. By changing the definition of person, it doesn't change any of the obligations that persons have. It doesn't change any of the obligations or duties of a trustee. So I don't think that in the future changing the definition of person is going to have any impact on what a trustee might be able to do or not do. In fact, in the present, if a trust were to act in any manner, it would have to be through the trustee, because the trust is just a document. It can't act as a person.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
No further questions. Thank you. Mr. Tapman?
Chairman Please. Barker, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is David Tapman, and I work for the State of Oregon's Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm the administrator for the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. And in that role, we are responsible for the administration and regulation of 16 different programs, and I want to speak to a couple of those today. And I'll jump right to this because I want to get back to what Representative Smith asked the last witness. The two in particular are the securities section and our commodities code. And I'll focus on the securities section. As you're probably well aware, the sale of securities is something that is highly regulated both federally and at the state level. We license the people that sell those, we register the securities that are sold, and we have a very aggressive anti-fraud program in connection with securities. The use of the word trust is found in several of our statutory definitions, as the last witness identified. One, persons are identified in the securities law to include trusts, and also the definition of securities includes the word trust. We are concerned that we want to flag this for the committee to say there are some unanticipated consequences, and as Representative Smith asked, would there be any negative impact? And yes, there could be negative impact if we took the word trust out of the definition of persons for ORS Chapter 59 and ORS Chapter 645, and allow people to use the vehicle of a trust, however legitimate or non-legitimate that trust actually may be, to sell securities. We have had a number of cases. I personally have prosecuted several cases involving trust in which people were using a vehicle called a trust. Now, they may not have been technically in compliance with the trust laws, but they were able to use that language, and we stopped those sales, but not after several million dollars of investor harm took place. So our concern is we would like the opportunity, and I've talked with Ms. Susan Grevy of the bar, to have a conversation and make sure that we address their concerns while simultaneously protecting Oregon investors and Oregon consumers from unintended harm by changing the word trust in Chapter 59 and 645.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? It would be very helpful if you know, working with the bar to come back with a great...
We would like that.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much. And
thank you.
Representative Stigler.
Well, Mr. Chair, in that regard, I would assume that if they're going to do that sort of reworking, that would take into consideration the portions that were referenced by the earlier witness.
Yeah, they will, yeah. And if anybody has any questions about bill drafting, Mr. Hendricks is here today. We don't think you're off the hook. If you want to come up and...
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks from Legislative Council's office. I'd be happy to go back and chat with these folks about their concerns on this. I do not think that we went beyond what was requested with the change to the term on trustee. Our concern is that person as defined for the ORS already includes individuals. Well, a trustee is an individual, and the whole point of the bill was to eliminate references to trust. Since they don't have legal standing, it's actually, if you're going to seek some legal action against the person, you're going to be doing it against the individual. Our bigger concern is that the definitions in the ORS kind of run all over the place. We do have one big definition of person for the ORS. It's in Chapter 174. It's 174-100. It doesn't mention trustees or concern. It just talks about individuals or the business entities. So if there's a problem with not having trustees in it, it's a problem for about 30,000 statutes in the ORS. So, you know, there have been a lot of these. Frequently people come in, they want their own definition of person. Usually they're trying to get the same thing, individuals and business entities. The one time when we think it's a good idea to have a definition is where they want to include public bodies, which is not included in the general definition for the ORS. If you want to have a law that applies to state agencies, for instance, you need to specifically mention them in your definition. So I'd be happy to work with them and see what we can figure out.
Good, appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2313. I'm going to open a work session back on House Bill 2312. We just got a fiscal in, sort of hot off the wire, and there is no fiscal, no expenditure impact. So this is the bill that Mr. Buford was testifying on earlier. It addresses the Native American and American Indian tribes definitions. May have a motion to move that past, send to the floor if they do pass.
Okay, it's House Bill 2312, right?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2312 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Shields moves House Bill 2312 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Roll call, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Excused.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
And, Representative Cameron just
aye.
Came back. Okay. Cameron. Okay. Bill passes. And Representative Shields, would you carry that on the floor? Thank you. Okay. Next item on the agenda is House Bill 2360, first public hearing. Provides that only the last four digits of a settler's social security number need be provided in certain trust-related proceedings. Okay.
I have the committee stand at ease for a few minutes. We're waiting for Representative Roblin to appear on this bill. So just stand at ease probably for 5 or 10 minutes. We'll see if we can't get a hold of him. Committee on Judiciary back to order. And Representative Roblin, if you could come up, please. We're open to public hearing on House Bill 2360.
Thank you, Representative Barker, Chair, and Committee. My name is Arnie Roblin. I am the State Representative from House District 9. And before you is a bill that I had drafted at the request of a local attorney. His name was John Witte. And Mr. Witte had worked on a number of issues, and he was concerned and continues to be concerned about the growing epidemic that we have about identity theft. And one of the things that, as he was going about working, came upon was this particular issue. And so, as current law requires that a certification of trust include the Social Security number of a person who creates the trust, if the person places real estate in trust and later decides to sell it, many title companies want to have the certification record, which causes the trust settler's Social Security number to be a public record. And so House Bill 302360 provides that only the last four digits of the settler's Social Security number be needed to be provided in certain trust-related proceedings, thus further reducing the opportunity for identity theft. We all have to give our Social Security numbers to banks and brokerages and others like interests who hold assets held in living trust, but there is no need to have it in a public property records for any curious person to see and potentially misuse. And I think the state has systematically been going through statutes and removing that Social Security and just putting in the last four digits. And I think this is just one of those places that we haven't got to yet, and he came upon, and I would encourage your passing this bill and stand ready to ask and answer any questions that I can.
Is it true that your Social Security number is one of the early ones that only has four numbers to start with?
It is. So it does cause me some problems, but that's the only problem that I have. But and I was shocked that you can tell what state I was born in, all that kind of stuff from those little four numbers. So it was surprising, yeah.
But no, I don't think it tells you where you were born.
No.
But it tells you where you got it.
It yes, it does.
It tells you the state you got it from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no further questions. Representative Smith.
I do have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have... Let me preface it by saying I think this sounds great. Okay. Do we have examples to trumpet about where this information was used in a case of identity theft or immediately being preemptive in case someday it is?
I would say that this is a preemptive one. Okay. And I think the state has begun this preemptive process in a number of other places. This is just one that probably wouldn't have shown up for a little longer in this whole process because it doesn't happen as often. But as he was going through an individual case, it became apparent to him that it could be a problem. Having noticed that we had already started doing this in other places, figured we might as well do it now.
Thanks, Representative Roland.
Thank you. No further questions. Thank you, Representative.
Yep.
I have one more person asked to speak. Ms. Meyer, please come forward. Let him carry it.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. It's actually my first time, finally, this session before you all. And just wanted to quickly support this bill, give a little bit of information. Also, just for those who don't know, the ACLU of Oregon was founded in 1955. We've been around a long time. Our membership has more than tripled in the last few years. And I will be testifying before you on not just criminal justice, but privacy and civil justice issues and all sorts. I come out of the woodwork. We are supportive of this bill. I wanted to alert folks to something I learned from a privacy expert a little while ago, which is that the last four digits of our Social Security number are actually the most precious ones, the most vulnerable, because if I do know for the most part what state you're born in, although it is where you got your Social Security issued, and I know about how old you are, I can pretty well come up with the first three numbers. If I have the last four digits, I have 00 to 99 to guess in between in the middle two numbers. And so, you know, we have moved to using these four digits as sort of the safety precaution, and I'm afraid it may bite us at some point. It's not as safe as I think we hope it would be. So I wanted to kind of, I had been given that information, I wanted to be able to share it with you all. And I'm not sure we can put the cat back in whatever the cat goes into on this issue, but... identity theft is an important issue, and our Social Security number certainly is an important one.
And are there other places that we should be considered doing this besides just on this?
Oh, Chair Barker, Representative Krieger, I'm sure there is, and I'm no expert on where all the documents are. And, you know, when it comes to the public record issues, which is often where we see this, we have no objection to sort of protecting that data. I mean, we support a vigorous and open public records law, but when it comes to some of the personal data that can be misused,
That needs to be looked at.
You know, and of course you've got, I shouldn't say this, but, you know, you've got DMV that has been collecting that number for years in our system, along with our date of birth and others. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that that system is safe and secure.
That's true.
Because that is a vulnerable system, because it's a, as more information gets put in our DMV, it's a one-stop shopping center for identity theft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Meyer, how many dues-paying members does the ACLU have about?
In Oregon, we have over 16,000, and nationally, well over 500,000. I don't know the latest number, but to suggest our increase in 2000, before 2001, we were, in terms of dues-paying members, and you know, a lot of people are supporters, they have not joined, we had about 5,000. So we have more than tripled in the last, 2008 years. And just to assure you, we do not disclose our membership, and I will never identify anyone as a member of the ACLU but myself.
I kid her about it all the time. You're a member.
Any further questions?
It's only $20 to become an ACLU member. So.
Oh my gosh. Hit my
bill. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you,
Chair. House Bill 2360. We don't have a fiscal back, so we can't move it today. When we do move it, Representative Roberman, would you carry it for us? Okay. Thank you. Is there any further business to come before the committee today?
Hearing none. Prepared for questions.
Yeah. Hearing none. Adjourned.